Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Wolf in the Wedding Dress, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together.
Chapter 1, The Proposal. They always said a man like Richard Hastings would never settle down. He was a self-made billionaire, the kind who thrived on control and power, a ruthless businessman who knew how to wield his influence. Men like him didn't fall in love, they acquired, conquered, and discarded. So, when he slipped a diamond the size of a quail's egg onto my trembling finger in the middle of that glittering gala, all eyes on us, it wasn't just a surprise for the crowd. It was a triumph for me. But of course I knew better. It wasn't love that brought Richard to one knee. It wasn't the stolen glances, or my feigned admiration for his world-shattering achievements. It wasn't my shy laughter, or the coy way I brushed my hair behind my ear whenever he complimented me. No, Richard wasn't proposing out of love. He was staking his claim, declaring me as his possession, a trophy to flaunt among his peers. That's what made my job so much easier. As the room erupted into applause, the air filled with congratulations and clinking champagne flutes, I felt a surge of exhilaration. The first step of my plan was complete. I'd locked him in. Now, I just had to play the part of the doting fiancé, let him believe he had me wrapped around his finger while I quietly pulled the strings. The wolf in a wedding dress, waiting for the perfect moment to strike. I smiled up at him, tears brimming in my eyes, not from joy, but from years of perfecting the art of deceit. "Yes," I exclaimed, my voice trembling just enough to sound genuine. The crowd surged closer, eager to offer their congratulations. I played my role perfectly, laughing softly as Richard's arm encircled my waist possessively. "I told you I'd surprise you," he murmured, his lips brushing against my ear. There was a note of smug satisfaction in his voice, as if he'd won some great prize. He had no idea how much of a game he was playing into. The rest of the evening was a blur of faces and meaningless conversations. Richard paraded me around the room, introducing me to people I couldn't care less about. Wealthy elites with too much money and too little sense. They all had that same hollow look in their eyes, that same air of superiority that made my stomach churn. But I smiled through it all, nodding politely and laughing at their terrible jokes. "She's perfect for you, Richard," one man said, slapping him on the back. "Finally settling down, huh? Never thought I'd see the day." Richard laughed, the sound rich and full of pride. "What can I say? She's special. Special. If only they knew." I'd spent months crafting this persona, studying his likes and dislikes, learning how to mirror his desires. Every detail of our love story was calculated, every move carefully planned. I wasn't just special. I was his perfect match, a woman tailor-made to slip past his defenses. But even as I basked in the glow of my victory, I couldn't shake the feeling that Richard was watching me too closely. His gaze lingered just a second too long, his smile a fraction too tight. It was as if he saw through the mask, as if he knew this wasn't love. I told myself it was paranoia. After all, Richard was a man accustomed to control. It was only natural for him to keep a close eye on his latest acquisition. Still, there was something about the way he looked at me that made my skin crawl. Later that night, when the party had finally wound down and the last of the guests had left, Richard took my hand and led me out onto the balcony. The city stretched out before us, glittering like a sea of stars. The air was cool, the faint hum of traffic rising from the streets below. He turned to me, his expression softer now, almost tender. "You make me want things I never thought I'd want," he said, his voice low. "A family. A legacy." I looked up at him, forcing a shy smile. "You already have a legacy, Richard. You've built an empire." "It's not enough," he said, shaking his head. "What's the point of having all this if there's no one to share it with? Someone I can trust." "Trust." The word hung between us like a challenge. I reached out, brushing a hand against his cheek. "You can trust me." He caught my hand, his grip firm, almost too firm. His eyes searched mine, and for a moment, I thought I saw something dark flicker behind them. "Can I?" he asked, his tone unreadable. I held his gaze, my heart pounding. Of course, I said, my voice steady. I love you, Richard. The words tasted like ash in my mouth, but they had the desired effect. His grip loosened, and he smiled, his earlier intensity fading. I love you too, he said, pulling me into his arms. I rested my head against his chest, my mind racing. Richard was a man who thrived on power, and I just handed him the illusion of control. But I knew better than to let my guard down. Men like Richard were dangerous, not just because of their wealth, but because of the secrets they carried. As I stood there in his arms, staring out at the glittering city, I couldn't help but wonder what skeletons he was hiding in his closet. Because if there was one thing I'd learned in my line of work, it was this. No one is ever as innocent as they seem. Least of all me. Chapter 2. The Wedding Preparations. When Richard declared he wanted a wedding fit for royalty, I bit back the urge to roll my eyes. Men like him never knew the true meaning of grandeur. To them, everything had to scream opulence. White roses imported from Ecuador, champagne flown in from France, and a guest list brimming with billionaires, politicians, and celebrities. It wasn't about love, or even the spectacle itself. It was about power. It was about making a statement. And yet, I played the reluctant bride, acting like I didn't want any of it. Maybe something smaller, I suggested one evening, my voice soft and hesitant. We were sitting in his study, a cavernous room lined with shelves of books he'd likely never touched. Richard loved to exude sophistication, but his true passions were deals and dominance. Smaller? He repeated, his brow furrowing as if the word was foreign to him. I nodded, keeping my expression demure. Something intimate. Just close family and friends. It's not about the size of the wedding. It's about us. His laugh was short and humorless, a sound that grated on my nerves. Darling, people like us don't do intimate. A wedding is a declaration. It's a stage where we show the world who we are. You deserve to be celebrated. I smiled, hiding the satisfaction that bloomed inside me. He'd taken the bait, just as I knew he would. By pretending to want less, I'd nudged him into wanting more, more extravagance, more expense. The bigger the wedding, the more distracted he'd be, and the more freedom I'd have to finalize my plans. The following weeks were a blur of meetings with wedding planners, florists, caterers, and designers. Richard insisted on being involved in every decision, though it was clear he wasn't interested in the details. He just wanted control. I played the accommodating fiancé, nodding along to his choices and throwing in the occasional suggestion to keep up appearances. Do you like this? He asked one afternoon, holding up a swatch of silk for the table runners. It's beautiful, I said, though I couldn't have cared less. My mind was elsewhere, focused on the small vial hidden in the back of my jewelry box. The poison had been surprisingly easy to acquire. A contact from my past life, someone who owed me a favor, had provided it without asking too many questions. Odorless, tasteless, and untraceable, he'd assured me. Works within minutes. I'd tucked it away, feeling the weight of it like a promise. As the wedding drew closer, I began to notice little cracks in Richard's polished facade. He was always on edge, snapping at his staff over the slightest mistakes. One evening, I walked into his office to find him hunched over his desk, muttering to himself as he sifted through a stack of papers. Is everything okay? I asked, my voice gentle. He looked up, his expression dark. Just business, he said curtly. But it wasn't just business. I'd overheard fragments of his phone calls, caught glimpses of documents he tried to keep hidden. Something wasn't right. Richard was hiding something, and whatever it was big. At first, I thought it might be an affair. Men like him were rarely faithful, and I wouldn't have been surprised if he had a mistress tucked away somewhere. But the more I listened, the more I realized it was something else, something darker. One night, I decided to test the waters. We were lying in bed, the glow of the city lights filtering through the curtains. Richard had his arm draped over me, his breathing slow and steady. Do you ever think about the future? I asked, my voice barely above a whisper. He didn't respond right away. When he finally spoke, his tone was distant. The future is unpredictable, he said. That's why we have to prepare for it, I pressed. No matter what happens, we'll face it together, right? He turned his head to look at me, his eyes searching mine. Of course, he said, but there was an edge to his voice, a flicker of something I couldn't quite place. I smiled, leaning in to kiss him. I'm glad, I said. Because I trust you. Completely. The lie slipped from my lips so easily, I almost believed it myself. The closer we got to the wedding, the more I began to feel like I was walking a tightrope. Richard's behavior grew increasingly erratic, his mood swinging from charming to cruel without warning. One moment he'd be showering me with gifts, and the next he'd be snapping at me for asking a simple question. "You don't need to worry about that," he said sharply when I asked about the guest list. "I was just curious," I replied, keeping my tone light. "Well, don't be," he said, his voice cold. I bit my tongue, forcing myself to stay calm. The last thing I needed was to provoke him. Despite his temper, I continued to play the role of the perfect bride-to-be. I attended fittings, smiled for photos, and made small talk with his friends and business associates. Every moment was an act, a carefully constructed performance designed to keep him off balance. But even as I worked to manipulate him, I couldn't shake the feeling that he was doing the same to me. There were times when I'd catch him watching me, his gaze piercing and unreadable. It was as if he knew something I didn't, as if he was waiting for me to slip up. And then there were the locked doors. The mansion was massive, with more rooms than I could count, but there were certain areas Richard kept off limits. One evening, while he was out, I tried the handle of one of the doors. It didn't budge. "Can I help you?" a voice said, startling me. I turned to see one of the housekeepers, her expression guarded. "No, I was just looking for the bathroom," I said quickly. She didn't respond, but the look in her eyes told me she didn't believe me. The night before the wedding, I stood in front of the mirror in my dressing room, staring at my reflection. The dress hung on a mannequin behind me, a masterpiece of lace and silk. It was the kind of gown little girls dreamed of, the kind that symbolized love and forever. But for me, it was a costume, a disguise. Tomorrow, I'd walk down the aisle, say my vows, and seal Richard's fate. I reached for the vial, holding it up to the light. The liquid inside was clear, innocent-looking but deadly. "This is it," I whispered to myself. "One more day." But as I slipped the vial back into its hiding place, a cold shiver ran down my spine. For the first time, I wondered if I was in over my head. Because Richard wasn't just any man. And I was beginning to realize that I might not be the only one playing a dangerous game. Chapter 3: The Vows. When the day of the wedding finally arrived, it was cloaked in perfection, on the surface, at least. The early morning air carried a crispness, and the sun bathed the sprawling estate in golden light. Everywhere I looked, the scene screamed extravagance. Rows upon rows of imported white roses blanketed the garden, their delicate petals shimmering with dew. A quartet played a soft melody in the distance, while servers in pressed white uniforms carried trays of champagne to the ever-growing crowd of guests. The whole affair was almost sickeningly perfect. But perfection, as I'd come to learn, was often a mask, a flawless veil draped over chaos and rot. I was part of that rot. I knew it. I embraced it. Every smile I gave, every coy laugh I offered, every flick of my veil was calculated to hide the storm brewing beneath the surface. I stood in the bridal suite, staring at my reflection in the floor-length mirror. My dress was a masterpiece of silk and lace, hugging my body in all the right places. The veil was pinned delicately to my curls, and the diamond necklace Richard had given me glimmered at my throat like a noose. "Perfect," the makeup artist murmured as she applied the finishing touches to my lipstick. "Perfect." The word sent a pang of bitterness through me. This was the culmination of months of planning, of endless lies, manipulation, and careful deceit. And yet, as I stared at the woman in the mirror, I felt an unfamiliar flicker of doubt. Was it fear? Or something more sinister? Whatever it was, I pushed it down, burying it beneath the layers of silk and the weight of the diamond on my finger. The walk to the altar was nothing short of theatrical. The long, winding aisle was framed by towering floral arrangements, and every step I took felt like it echoed through the silent crowd. All eyes were on me, their gazes heavy with envy, admiration, and judgment. They saw a radiant bride, a woman lucky enough to snare the elusive Richard Hastings. If only they knew. As I walked, my eyes locked on Richard, who stood at the altar waiting for me. He looked the part of the perfect groom, dashing in his tailored suit, his hair slicked back, his smile just the right mix of confidence and affection. But his eyes betrayed him. They were sharp, almost calculating, as they followed my every step. I knew that look. It was the look of a predator watching its prey. For a fleeting moment, I wondered if he knew. If somehow he'd pieced together the truth. But no, that was impossible. I'd been careful, meticulous. Richard was a master of control, yes, but he wasn't invincible. He wasn't me. The ceremony began with all the usual pomp and circumstance. The officiant droned on about love and commitment, about two souls becoming one. I tuned most of it out, my focus on keeping my expression soft and loving, my smile genuine. Richard's hand held mine, his grip firm and possessive. When it came time to exchange vows, my stomach twisted. Not from guilt, I'd abandoned that emotion long ago, but from the sheer weight of the charade. I promise to love you, I began, my voice trembling just enough to sound heartfelt. To honor you, to stand by your side through every trial, every triumph, every moment. You are my heart, my home, my forever. The crowd let out a collective sigh of adoration, and I fought the urge to roll my eyes. Richard's smile widened, and for a moment, I thought I saw a flicker of satisfaction. Triumph? He slid the ring onto my finger, his touch lingering. And I promise to cherish you, he said, his voice low and deliberate. To protect you, to keep you safe. To love you forever. There was an edge to his words, a dark undertone that sent a shiver down my spine. But I couldn't afford to falter. I smiled up at him, my eyes shining with manufactured tears. The officiant declared us husband and wife, and the crowd erupted into applause as Richard pulled me into a kiss. His lips were warm against mine, but his grip on my waist was ironclad, almost bruising. It was a reminder, a warning. As we turned to face the crowd, I caught sight of someone in the audience. A woman I didn't recognize, her expression cold and calculating. Her gaze lingered on me, piercing through the facade. My stomach tightened. Who is she? And why did I feel like she knew something I didn't? The reception was a blur of laughter, music, and champagne. Guests milled about, congratulating us, their voices a cacophony of meaningless chatter. Richard played the role of the devoted husband perfectly, his arm around my waist as he introduced me to anyone who mattered. You've made him a better man, one woman said, her voice dripping with false sweetness. He's lucky to have you, another man added, clinking his glass against mine. I smiled and thanked them, playing my part flawlessly. But my mind was elsewhere, replaying Richard's vows in my head. There was something about the way he'd said them, the way his gaze had lingered on me, as if he was daring me to make a move. As the evening wore on, I began to notice more inconsistencies, small details that didn't add up. Richard's phone buzzed constantly, and each time, he excused himself to take the call. The woman from the ceremony lingered on the edge of the crowd, her eyes never leaving us. And then there was the man in the corner, his face half hidden in the shadows, who seemed far more interested in Richard than the festivities. Later that night, after the guests had gone and the house was quiet, Richard and I sat by the fireplace in his study, champagne in hand. To us, he said, raising his glass. To us, I echoed, forcing a smile. He studied me for a long moment, his expression unreadable. You were perfect today, he said finally. Thank you, I replied, my voice soft. He leaned in, his lips brushing against my ear. But the real question is, how perfect will you be tomorrow? The words sent a chill down my spine, and for the first time, I felt a sliver of fear. Richard wasn't just a mark. He was something far more dangerous. And I was beginning to realize I might have underestimated him. Chapter 4, The Wedding Night. The house was unnervingly quiet after the last of the guests had left. The echo of laughter and clinking glasses had faded into the stillness of the night, leaving only the sound of the waves crashing softly against the shore in the distance. Richard and I had returned to his mansion, or rather our mansion, as he had so proudly declared earlier in the evening. He'd insisted we spend the first night of our marriage here, away from the prying eyes of the world, in the intimacy of our new life together. It was the perfect setting for what I had planned. The grand estate, with its towering ceilings and endless halls, felt more like a labyrinth than a home. As I walked through the dimly lit corridors, my heels clicking against the marble floors, I could feel the weight of the night pressing down on me. The dress clung to my body like a second skin, the veil now discarded, leaving me with the strange sensation of vulnerability. My pulse quickened with every step, my mind racing with thoughts of what was to come. Richard was waiting for me in the parlor, a glass of champagne in hand. He looked at ease, lounging in one of the leather armchairs by the fire, the glow of the flames casting shadows across his face. There was an almost predatory quality to the way he watched me enter the room, his gaze raking over me as if he were appraising something he'd just purchased. Come, he said, his voice smooth and commanding. Let's toast to our future. I forced a smile, making my way to him with practiced grace. To forever, I said, taking the glass he offered me. To forever, he echoed, raising his glass to mine. The crystal rang out softly as they touched, the sound almost ominous in the quiet room. I took a sip, the bubbles fizzing against my tongue. He watched me intently, his eyes never leaving my face. It was unsettling, the way he looked at me, not with the affection of a newlywed husband, but with something darker, more calculating. I'd seen that look before, on the faces of men who thought they held all the power. But they never did. Not in the end. Richard leaned back in his chair, swirling the champagne in his glass. "So tell me," he said, his tone casual but his eyes sharp, "was today everything you dreamed of?" I laughed softly, setting my glass down on the table beside me. "More than I could have imagined," I said. The lie slipped from my lips effortlessly, like second nature. "You've given me everything I could ever want." His smile didn't reach his eyes. "Good," he said, taking another sip of his drink. "Because I meant every word I said today. You're mine now, and I take care of what's mine." The way he said it sent a shiver down my spine, but I kept my expression neutral. "And I'll take care of you," I said, my voice soft and sincere. The truth of that statement, of course, was far darker than he could ever imagine. The vial was hidden in the pocket of my robe, which I'd left draped over the chair in the adjoining bedroom. I'd been carrying it with me all day, the weight of it a constant reminder of what had to be done. The plan was simple. Wait until the moment was right, then slip the poison into his drink. It was quick, painless, and untraceable. A perfect crime. Or so I thought. As the fire crackled in the hearth, Richard rose from his chair and crossed the room to the small bar cart in the corner. "We need something stronger to celebrate," he said, pouring two glasses of whiskey. I watched him carefully, my heart pounding in my chest. He handed me one of the glasses, his fingers brushing against mine. The touch lingered just a moment too long, and I felt a flicker of unease. "To new beginnings," he said, raising his glass. "To new beginnings," I echoed, taking a small sip. The whiskey burned as it went down, but it did little to steady my nerves. Richard sat back down, his gaze never leaving me. "You're quiet tonight," he said, his tone almost accusatory. "Something on your mind?" I shook my head, forcing a smile. "Just taking it all in," I said. "It's been a whirlwind of a day." He nodded, leaning forward to rest his elbows on his knees. "It has," he said, his voice low. "And yet, I can't help but feel like there's something you're not telling me." The words hung in the air like a threat. I felt my stomach tighten, but I kept my expression calm. "What do you mean?" I asked, feigning innocence. He smiled then, a slow, deliberate smile that sent a chill down my spine. "Just an observation," he said. "A man in my position learns to trust his instincts. And mine are telling me that you're hiding something." I laughed softly, the sound forced and hollow. "Richard, you're imagining things," I said. "I'm not hiding anything." "Aren't you?" he asked, his gaze piercing. I held his stare, refusing to back down. "I think you've had too much to drink," I said, my tone light but firm. "You're reading into things that aren't there." For a moment, I thought he might press the issue, but then he leaned back in his chair, his smile widening. "Perhaps," he said. "Or perhaps I know you better than you think." The tension in the room was suffocating, but I couldn't afford to let it rattle me. I excused myself, retreating to the bedroom under the guise of freshening up. Once inside, I leaned against the door, my heart pounding. This wasn't going according to plan. Richard was suspicious, more so than I'd anticipated. I needed to act quickly, before he could unravel the truth. I retrieved the vial from my robe, the cool glass smooth against my fingers. This was it, the moment I'd been preparing for. When I returned to the parlor, Richard was standing by the window, his back to me. The moonlight cast a pale glow across his figure, and for a moment he looked almost vulnerable. Almost. I approached him quietly, the vial hidden in the palm of my hand. "I thought we could have one more drink," I said, my voice soft. He turned to face me, his expression unreadable. "A nightcap?" he asked, arching a brow. "How thoughtful." I smiled, holding up the empty glass I'd brought with me. "To celebrate," I said. He nodded, taking the glass from me and returning to the bar cart. My heart raced as I watched him pour the whiskey, his movements slow and deliberate. When he turned back to me, I slipped the vial into his drink, the liquid dissolving instantly. "To us," I said, handing him the glass. "To us," he echoed, raising it to his lips. But as he drank, a smile spread across his face, one that was cold and calculating and far too knowing. "You didn't think it would be that easy, did you?" he asked, his voice laced with mockery. My blood ran cold. Before I could respond, the room began to spin, and a sharp pain stabbed through my chest. The glass slipped from my hand, shattering on the floor. Richard stepped closer, his smile widening. "You're not the only one who knows how to play the game," he said. "Did you really think I wouldn't see this coming?" As darkness closed in around me, his voice was the last thing I heard. "I told you, you're mine now. Forever." Chapter 5, The Revelation. The world came back to me in fragments. My body was heavy, weighed down as if I'd been buried under layers of concrete. I tried to move, but my limbs felt foreign, unresponsive. My head pounded with a sharp, rhythmic ache, and every breath I took burned as if my lungs were filled with acid. Slowly, my senses began to return. The cold, hard surface beneath me. The faint hum of distant voices. The sharp smell of whiskey and cigar smoke lingering in the air. My eyes fluttered open, the dim light above me stinging as I squinted against it. I wasn't in the parlor anymore. I was in a different room, one I'd never seen before. The walls were bare, a stark contrast to the opulence of the rest of the mansion. The only furniture was the chair I was slumped in and the small table beside me, where an empty glass sat mocking me. I tried to sit up, but a wave of nausea hit me, and I groaned softly. The sound was barely audible, but it was enough to draw attention. A door creaked open, and I heard the familiar sound of polished shoes against the floor. "Well, well," Richard's voice cut through the haze, sharp and mocking. "Look who's finally awake." I forced my head up, blinking until his face came into focus. He stood before me, his suit still immaculate, not a hair out of place. He looked calm, collected, and utterly terrifying. "What?" My voice cracked, barely more than a whisper. "What did you do?" He smiled, a cold, humorless smile that sent a chill down my spine. "What did I do?" he repeated, feigning innocence. "Oh, darling, this isn't about me. This is about you. Or, more specifically, the little stunt you tried to pull tonight." I felt my stomach drop as the events of the night came rushing back. The champagne. The whiskey. The vial. My heart pounded in my chest as I realized the truth. He knew. He'd known all along. "You poisoned me," I said, my voice shaking. He tilted his head, his expression almost amused. "No, you poisoned yourself," he said. "You see, when you decided to play your little game, you forgot one crucial detail. I'm always 10 steps ahead." Richard began to pace the room, his hands clasped behind his back. "Did you really think I wouldn't notice?" he asked, his tone almost conversational. "The way you wormed your way into my life, the way you mirrored my every move, my every interest. You were good, I'll admit. Very convincing. But you overplayed your hand." I clenched my fists, my nails digging into my palms as anger and fear warred within me. "You don't know what you're talking about," I said, though the words felt hollow even to me. "Oh, but I do," he said, stopping to face me. "I know everything, darling. I know about the poison, about the lies, about the careful little game you've been playing. But you see, there's one thing you didn't account for, me." He leaned down, his face inches from mine. "You think you're a predator, but you're nothing more than prey. And now you're mine." I forced myself to meet his gaze, refusing to show weakness. "So, what now?" I asked, my voice cold. "Are you going to kill me?" He straightened, laughing softly. "Kill you," he repeated. "No, that would be too easy. Too quick. And frankly, not nearly as satisfying." He began to circle me, his footsteps slow and deliberate. "No, I have something much better in mind. You see, you made a mistake coming after me. But I'll give you credit, you have potential. And I'm nothing if not generous." I frowned, his words not making sense. "What are you talking about?" He stopped in front of me, his smile widening. "I'm offering you a choice," he said. "You can continue to play your little games, try to outsmart me, and end up 6 feet under. Or," he leaned in closer, his voice dropping to a whisper, "you can work with me." I stared at him, my mind racing. "Work with you?" I repeated, disbelief evident in my tone. He nodded. "Think about it," he said. "You're smart, resourceful, and ruthless. But you lack discipline. With my guidance, you could be unstoppable." The words hung in the air, heavy with implication. It was a trap, it had to be. But the way he spoke, the certainty in his tone, made it clear that he believed every word. "What's the catch?" I asked, my voice steady despite the fear coursing through me. His smile turned cold. "The catch is simple. You belong to me now. No more games, no more lies. You answer to me, and you do exactly as I say. In return, I'll make sure you never have to worry about anything again. Money, power, protection, it's all yours. But betray me," he trailed off, his gaze darkening. "And I'll make you wish I'd let the poison finish the job." I swallowed hard, my mind racing. He was giving me a way out, or at least the illusion of one. But could I trust him? Could I survive in his world, playing by his rules? And more importantly, could I find a way to turn the tables before it was too late? I took a deep breath, forcing myself to stay calm. "Fine," I said finally. "I'll do it. I'll work with you." His smile returned, and this time it reached his eyes. "Smart girl," he said. "I knew you'd see reason." He reached out, brushing a strand of hair from my face. The gesture was almost tender, but the look in his eyes was anything but. "Now, let's get started," he said. We have a lot of work to do. As he walked away, leaving me alone in the cold, empty room, I felt a flicker of something I hadn't expected. Hope. Because if there was one thing I'd learned, it was this. No matter how dire the situation, there was always a way to win. And I wasn't done playing the game. Not by a long shot. Chapter 6, The Game Changes. The morning after the poison debacle, I woke to find myself in a new kind of prison. The room Richard had locked me in overnight was gone, replaced by a luxurious suite that dripped with wealth. The silk sheets, the plush rugs, the gold accents, everything was designed to scream opulence. But to me it felt like a cage. The door wasn't locked when I tried it, but I knew better than to assume I was free. Richard was toying with me, testing my limits. He wanted me to think I had a choice, but deep down, I knew I didn't. I was a pawn in his game now, and he had all the power. I spent the morning exploring the suite, trying to make sense of my situation. There were no cameras, at least none that I could see, but I felt his eyes on me regardless. Every movement, every thought, every breath felt like it was being scrutinized. It was suffocating. At noon, a knock at the door startled me. Before I could answer, it swung open, and Richard strolled in as if he owned the place. And in a way, he did. "Good morning, darling," he said, his tone dripping with false sweetness. "I trust you slept well." I forced a smile, knowing better than to provoke him. As well as I could, given the circumstances. He chuckled, leaning against the doorframe. "You'll adjust," he said. "In time." I crossed my arms, narrowing my eyes at him. "What do you want, Richard?" "What I've always wanted," he said, his expression hardening. "Control. And now that I have it, I intend to use it." We sat across from each other in the dining room, the tension between us thick enough to cut with a knife. He had a plate of something elaborate in front of him. Lobster, perhaps, but I couldn't bring myself to eat. My appetite had been replaced by a gnawing sense of dread. "You'll start today," he said, cutting into his meal with precision. "I have a small task for you." "What kind of task?" I asked, my voice sharper than I intended. He smirked, clearly enjoying my discomfort. "There's a man I've been having trouble with. A competitor. He's been sniffing around my business, trying to undercut me. I need him." "Removed." The words hung in the air like a noose. "You want me to kill him?" I asked, my stomach churning. "Nothing so dramatic," Richard said, waving a hand dismissively. "I just need you to discredit him. Dig into his life, find his secrets, and use them against him. Ruin him." I stared at him, my mind racing. He was testing me, seeing how far I was willing to go. But more than that, he was showing me what he was capable of. This wasn't about the man he wanted destroyed. It was about me. He was molding me into something darker, something more like him. "And if I say no?" I asked, already knowing the answer. His smile didn't falter, but his eyes darkened. "Then you'll find out just how creative I can be." By the time I left the house, the weight of Richard's demands was suffocating. He'd given me a dossier on the man he wanted ruined, a tech mogul named Gregory Langston. According to Richard, Langston had been making moves against him for months, trying to steal contracts and sabotage his business. My job was to find a way to stop him. The first thing I did was dig into Langston's background. It didn't take long to uncover the skeletons in his closet. He had a mistress, two, actually, and a gambling problem that had left him in debt to some very dangerous people. It was almost too easy. Using the information, I began to plant the seeds of his downfall. Anonymous tips to the press, whispers in the right ears, carefully placed evidence. It was a web of lies and manipulation, and I was the spider at the center. Within days, his reputation was in tatters. Investors pulled out, contracts were canceled, and his personal life became tabloid fodder. But as I watched Langston's life unravel, I couldn't ignore the sick feeling in my gut. This wasn't just about survival anymore. It was about becoming the very thing I'd fought so hard to destroy. Richard was thrilled with my work. He celebrated with champagne, toasting to my success. But I saw through the facade. This wasn't a partnership, it was a leash. Every task he gave me, every victory I achieved, tightened his hold on me. "You're a natural," he said one evening, his tone dripping with pride. "I knew you had it in you." I forced a smile, raising my glass to his. "Anything for you," I said, the words tasting like ash in my mouth. But even as I played the part of his loyal accomplice, I was already planning my next move. Richard thought he had me under his thumb, but he'd underestimated me. He'd shown me his hand, revealed his weaknesses. And I intended to use them against him. The turning point came late one night, when I stumbled upon something I wasn't supposed to see. Richard had left his office door unlocked, a rare oversight, and I couldn't resist the temptation to snoop. Inside, I found files, contracts, and correspondence that painted a very different picture of the man I thought I knew. Richard wasn't just ruthless, he was dangerous. The deals he'd made, the people he'd crossed, the lives he'd destroyed, it was all there, laid out in black and white. And at the center of it all was a name I recognized, mine. He'd been watching me long before we'd met, tracking my movements, studying my patterns. I wasn't just a random woman he'd fallen for. I was a target, a pawn in a game I didn't even know I was playing. The realization hit me like a punch to the gut. Richard hadn't fallen for my act. He'd orchestrated it. He'd pulled me into his world, knowing exactly who I was and what I wanted. And now he was using me to further his own agenda. But what he didn't realize was that I wasn't the same woman he'd targeted. I'd learned from him, adapted to his games. And I was ready to fight back. That night, as I stared at the files spread out before me, I made a decision. I wasn't going to run. I wasn't going to let Richard win. If he wanted a game, I'd give him one. But this time, I'd be the one pulling the strings. Because if there's one thing I've learned, it's that power isn't given, it's taken. And I was ready to take it all. Chapter 7, The Truth Unveiled. I sat in the dark, the only illumination coming from the dim desk lamp that flickered every so often, casting shifting shadows across Richard's hidden office. The files I'd uncovered lay before me, a damning collection of his sins. Names, dates, amounts of money exchanged. Every detail was meticulously recorded, a testament to the precision of Richard's cruelty. The deeper I dug, the more I realized just how elaborate his web was. He wasn't just a businessman, he was a puppeteer pulling strings across industries, governments, and lives. People who had crossed him weren't simply ruined, they vanished. Entire families erased like chalk wiped from a board. It wasn't business, it was execution. And I had walked into his trap willingly, thinking I was the predator when, in reality, I had been prey all along. The first file that caught my attention was one with my name scrawled across the tab. My heart raced as I opened it, revealing a detailed dossier on me. Photos, bank statements, old addresses, even the aliases I had used in my previous cons. He knew everything. My entire life was laid bare before him, reduced to a series of calculated risks and opportunities. I flipped through the pages, bawling rising in my throat as I read his notes in the margins. Skilled manipulator. Calculated liar. Potential for loyalty if controlled correctly. Controlled. That's all I was to him. Another tool, another pawn to be moved across the board. But the next page was what truly froze me in place. It was a timeline, starting months before I'd even met him. He hadn't chosen me by accident. He'd orchestrated everything. The chance meeting at the charity gala, the shared interests, the whirlwind romance. He'd built the perfect trap, and I'd fallen for it. I closed the file, my hands trembling. Rage boiled beneath the surface, but so did something else, fear. Richard wasn't just toying with me, he was orchestrating my destruction. I didn't hear him enter. One moment I was alone, and the next his voice cut through the silence like a blade. Find anything interesting? I froze, my heart slamming against my ribcage. Slowly, I turned to face him. He stood in the doorway, his silhouette framed by the dim light from the hall. He didn't look angry. If anything, he seemed amused. You're more curious than I gave you credit for, he said, stepping into the room. His movements were slow, deliberate, like a predator closing in on its prey. Most people would have been smart enough to stay out of my office. Most people aren't married to you, I shot back, my voice sharper than I intended. He chuckled, the sound low and mocking. Touché, he said, leaning against the desk. He reached out, plucking the file with my name on it from my hands. I see you found your greatest hits. I clenched my fists, my nails digging into my palms. You've been watching me, I said, my voice low. You planned all of this. Of course I did, he said, his tone matter of fact. Do you really think I leave things to chance? I knew exactly who you were the moment I saw you. And I knew you'd come to me, like a moth to a flame. His confidence was infuriating, but it was also unnerving. He wasn't just arrogant, he was certain, as if he held all the cards and knew I had no hand to play. Why me? I asked, forcing myself to meet his gaze. Why go to all this trouble? Because you're useful, he said simply. You're clever, resourceful, and ruthless when you need to be. But more importantly, you're predictable. I knew exactly how you'd play this game, because I've seen it before. He leaned closer, his eyes narrowing. The poison, the lies, the manipulation, it was all so obvious. You're good, but you're not great. Not yet. I felt the anger rising again, hot and uncontrollable. You think you're so much better than me, I snapped. But you're just a coward hiding behind money and power. His smile faded, replaced by something colder. Careful, he said, his voice a warning. You're in my world now, and I don't take kindly to disrespect. I stood my ground, refusing to back down. Your world, I said, my voice dripping with contempt. And what a world it is. Lies, betrayal, murder. How many lives have you destroyed, Richard? How many people have you used and discarded? As many as it takes, he said, his tone devoid of remorse. That's the difference between us, darling. You play for survival. I play to win. For a moment, neither of us spoke. The air between us crackled with tension, a battle of wills unfolding in silence. I could feel his eyes on me, studying me, searching for a crack in my armor. But I wouldn't give him the satisfaction. You know, he said finally, his voice softer now, almost gentle, you don't have to fight me. You could have everything you've ever wanted. Money, power, security. All you have to do is stay by my side. And become what? I asked, my voice trembling. Your puppet? Your accomplice? Another tool for you to use. No, he said, shaking his head. Not a tool. A partner. The word hung in the air, tempting and repulsive all at once. He was offering me a way out, a chance to escape the noose tightening around my neck. But at what cost? I took a deep breath, forcing myself to think clearly. Richard was dangerous, but he wasn't invincible. He'd underestimated me once, and I wouldn't give him the chance to do it again. Fine, I said, my voice steady. I'll play your game. But don't think for a second that I trust you. He smiled, and for the first time, it seemed genuine. I wouldn't expect anything less. As he turned to leave, I felt a flicker of hope. He thought he'd won, that I was under his thumb. But what he didn't realize was that I wasn't playing to survive anymore. I was playing to win. That night, as I sat alone in the dark, I began to formulate a plan. Richard had made one fatal mistake. He'd shown me his hand. And now, I knew exactly how to beat him at his own game. Because if there's one thing I've learned, it's that power is never given. It's taken. And I was ready to take everything. Chapter 8, The Final Betrayal. The days that followed were a masterclass in deception. I moved through Richard's world like a shadow, careful to give him no reason to doubt me while quietly orchestrating my own rebellion. Every interaction, every word, every carefully constructed smile was part of the act. He thought he'd won, that I was his to control. But he had no idea that I was weaving a web of my own. Richard's empire was vast, but like any structure built on lies, it had its weak points. He'd built his power by exploiting others, using their greed, fear, and desperation against them. But in doing so, he'd created enemies, powerful ones. I just had to find them and convince them that I was the key to bringing him down. My first move was subtle. I began observing his inner circle, the men and women he trusted most. There was Garrett, his lawyer, who handled the more unsavory aspects of his business. Then there was Sophia, his right hand and likely the closest thing he had to a confidant. And finally, there was Anton, his enforcer, a hulking, silent man who followed Richard's orders without question. I studied them, noting their weaknesses and motivations. Garrett had a gambling problem that he kept well hidden, but was spiraling out of control. Sophia was fiercely loyal to Richard, but she had a soft spot for her younger sister, who was drowning in student debt. Anton, though intimidating, was surprisingly simple. He was loyal because Richard paid him better than anyone else ever had. They were all vulnerable, and I intended to exploit every one of them. My first target was Garrett. I waited until Richard was out of the house, attending one of his many late-night business meetings, before approaching Garrett at his office. He looked surprised to see me, but quickly masked it with a forced smile. "Mrs. Hastings," he said, standing to greet me. "To what do I owe the pleasure?" "Please call me by my first name," I said, closing the door behind me. "I wanted to talk to you about something personal." His brow furrowed, but he gestured for me to sit. "Of course," he said. "What's on your mind?" I leaned forward, lowering my voice to a conspiratorial whisper. "I know about your gambling debts," I said, watching as the color drained from his face. "I don't know what you're talking about," he said quickly, his hands fidgeting with the pen on his desk. "Don't insult my intelligence, Garrett," I said, my tone sharp. "I've seen the accounts. I know how much you owe and who you owe it to. It's only a matter of time before they come for you. Unless..." "Unless what?" he asked, his voice barely above a whisper. "Unless you help me," I said. "Richard thinks he's untouchable, but we both know that's not true. He's made enemies, and those enemies are willing to pay a lot for the right information. Information that you and I can provide." Garrett stared at me, his jaw tightening. "If Richard finds out, He won't, I said, cutting him off. Not if we're careful. And if we succeed, you'll be free of your debts. You can start over. He hesitated, but I could see the wheels turning in his mind. Greed and fear are powerful motivators, and I knew I'd struck a nerve. Fine, he said finally. But if this goes south, I'm blaming you. Deal, I said, a smile tugging at the corners of my lips. One down, two to go. Sophia was more difficult. Her loyalty to Richard ran deep, and she didn't trust me. But I knew her weakness, her sister. I waited until I had her alone in the office, under the pretense of discussing a charity event Richard was hosting. You've been with Richard for a long time, I said casually, watching her reaction. 7 years, she said, her tone neutral. That's impressive, I said. He must trust you a great deal. She shrugged, clearly uncomfortable with the conversation. He values loyalty. Loyalty is a rare thing these days, I said, leaning back in my chair. But it's not always rewarded, is it? Her eyes narrowed. What are you getting at? I'm saying that loyalty to Richard won't protect you or your sister when things go wrong, I said. And they will go wrong, Sophia. Richard is making enemies faster than he can silence them. When the walls come down, do you really think he'll protect you? She didn't respond, but I could see the doubt in her eyes. I pressed on. I can help you, I said. I can make sure you and your sister are safe. But I need you to trust me. She hesitated, her gaze flickering to the door. If Richard finds out, he won't, I said firmly. This stays between us. After a long pause, she nodded. What do you need me to do? Just keep an eye on him, I said. Let me know if he starts to suspect anything. She nodded again, though I could see the fear in her eyes. It wasn't loyalty that kept her tied to Richard. It was survival. And I was giving her a way out. Anton was the easiest to sway. He didn't care about loyalty or morality. He cared about money. I approached him in the garage, where he was smoking a cigar and cleaning one of Richard's cars. I hear Richard pays you well, I said, leaning against the car. He glanced at me, his expression unreadable. Well enough. I can pay you better, I said. He raised an eyebrow, but he didn't respond. I know you've been doing his dirty work, I continued. But if you're smart, you'll realize that his days are numbered. When he falls, you'll fall with him. Unless you switch sides. He took a long drag from his cigar, considering my words. And what's in it for me? Money, I said. Enough to retire. And protection. When this is over, you'll never have to look over your shoulder again. He exhaled a plume of smoke, his eyes narrowing. I'll think about it. Piece by piece, I built my rebellion, turning Richard's most trusted allies against him. It wasn't easy, and it wasn't without risk. Every move I made, every word I spoke, had to be calculated, precise. One misstep, and it would all come crashing down. But as the days turned into weeks, I began to see the cracks forming in Richard's empire. His once loyal allies grew distant, his carefully constructed facade began to slip, and the man who had once seemed untouchable was starting to look vulnerable. And I was ready to strike. Late one night, I stood in the shadows of Richard's office, watching as he poured himself a drink. He didn't see me, didn't know I was there. For the first time, he looked human, tired, fragile. I stepped into the light, and he turned to face me, surprise flashing across his face. What are you doing here? He asked. Ending this, I said. And with that, the game changed forever. Chapter 9, The Final Confrontation. The air in Richard's office felt heavier that night, as if the walls themselves were bracing for what was about to unfold. The faint smell of his cologne lingered in the room, mixing with the scent of the whiskey he had just poured. He stood there, glass in hand, his gaze fixed on me with a mix of surprise and intrigue. But beneath that carefully constructed mask, I could see something else, a flicker of unease. He didn't like being caught off guard. You look determined, he said, swirling the amber liquid in his glass. His voice was calm, smooth, but his eyes were sharp, calculating. What are you doing here so late? I stepped closer, my heels clicking against the polished floor. I came to finish what you started, I said, my voice steady. This game we've been playing, it ends tonight. He chuckled, the sound low and mocking. Is that so? And how exactly do you plan to do that? Because last I checked, I was the one holding all the cards. Not anymore, I said, pulling a folder from my bag and tossing it onto his desk. The contents spilled out, copies of emails, financial records, photos, evidence of every crime he'd committed, every deal he'd made in the shadows. It was a damning collection, one that could destroy him if it ever saw the light of day. His smile faltered, just for a moment, before he schooled his expression back into one of calm indifference. Impressive, he said, picking up one of the papers and glancing at it. You've been busy. You underestimated me, I said, crossing my arms. You thought you could control me, that I'd just fall in line. But the thing about people like us, Richard, is that we don't stay in cages for long. He set the paper down, leaning back in his chair. And what exactly do you want? He asked. Revenge? Money? Freedom? All of it, I said. I want everything you took from me. And more. He stood, setting his glass down on the desk with a soft clink. You've thought this through, he said, his tone almost admiring. I'll give you credit for that. But you're forgetting one thing. What's that? I didn't get to where I am by playing fair, he said, stepping around the desk to stand in front of me. You think this is the first time someone's tried to take me down? You're not the first, and you won't be the last. I held my ground, refusing to let him intimidate me. Maybe, I said. But I'm not like the others. I know your secrets, Richard. I know how you think, how you operate. And I've already taken precautions. He tilted his head, a flicker of curiosity crossing his face. Precautions? I smiled, pulling my phone from my pocket and holding it up. Everything you see here has already been sent to people I trust. If anything happens to me, it all goes public. Your empire, your reputation, your freedom, it'll all be gone. For the first time, I saw real fear in his eyes. It was fleeting, quickly replaced by anger, but it was there. I'd struck a nerve. You're playing a dangerous game, he said, his voice low. So are you, I shot back. But the difference is, I'm willing to burn this whole thing to the ground if it means taking you down with me. The tension in the room was suffocating, the air crackling with unspoken threats. Richard stared at me, his jaw tight, his hands clenched at his sides. I could see the wheels turning in his head, the calculations he was making, the risks he was weighing. You think you've won, he said finally, his voice cold. But you haven't. People like you don't win. You survive, sure, but you don't win. I stepped closer, closing the distance between us. Watch me, I said, my voice steady and unwavering. He smirked, but it didn't reach his eyes. You know, I almost respect you, he said. You've got guts. I'll give you that. But guts won't save you. Neither will arrogance, I said. And that's your downfall, Richard. You think you're untouchable, but you're not. Everyone has a weakness. And what's mine? He asked, his tone mocking. I leaned in, my voice barely above a whisper. Me. Before he could respond, the door burst open and Garrett, Sophia, and Anton entered the room. They looked tense, their eyes flicking between me and Richard. I'd called them here, knowing that their presence would shift the balance of power. They were his inner circle, the people he trusted most. But now they were mine. What is this? Richard demanded, his voice laced with fury. They've seen the evidence, I said. They know what you've done, how you've used them. They're done being your pawns. Garrett stepped forward, his expression grim. You crossed the line, Richard, he said. We're not going down with you. Sophia nodded, her jaw tight. You made us complicit in your crimes. But we're done. Anton didn't say anything, but the look on his face said it all. He was loyal to whoever paid him, and I'd made sure my offer was more than generous. Richard's face turned red with anger, his hands clenching into fists. You think you can betray me and get away with it? He spat. You're all fools. No, Richard, I said, stepping forward. The only fool here is you. You built this empire on lies and manipulation, but you forgot one thing: people like you always fall. And when they do, it's the people closest to them who push them off the edge. He lunged at me, but Anton intercepted him, shoving him back against the desk. Richard struggled, his face twisted with rage, but he was outnumbered, outmaneuvered, and outplayed. You're finished, I said, my voice cold. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. The police arrived shortly after, tipped off by an anonymous call I'd made earlier in the night. They arrested Richard on charges of fraud, embezzlement, and conspiracy. Charges backed by the mountain of evidence I'd provided. As they led him away in handcuffs, he turned to look at me, his eyes filled with hatred. This isn't over, he said. You'll regret this. I met his gaze, unflinching. No, Richard, I said. You will. In the weeks that followed, I took control of what was left of his empire. It wasn't easy. There were battles to fight, alliances to rebuild, and enemies to fend off. But I was ready. I'd learned from the best, after all. Richard had taught me how to play the game. But now it was my game. And I intended to win. Because in the end, power isn't given, it's taken. And I'd taken it all.